What could go wrong?
Mr. Speaker,
you're at the intersection of business and politics. This is the 14th and G podcast from Melman Consulting. Now, here's our host, Dean Hinkson.
Thank you for setting your podcast out, the 14th and G, as the nice man said. I am your host, Dean Hinkson, coming to you live high atop Colorado building in downtown Washington, D.C. at the worldwide headquarters of 14th and G, where we're going to cover all of 2024 in 24 minutes or less, or it's free. Why do you do it, Dean? Well, because I'm selfless. I want to help just as many people as the good Lord will let me. And here to help me are Republican Bruce Melman and Democrat David Thomas. Boys, let's jump right in. How are we doing today?
Doing fantastic. It's an honor to be in the same room as you.
Wow.
Well, that seems a little much, but yeah, I'm happy to see you too, Dean.
Well, lots of good feelings here in the room. It's recess. It's April. We had the Nats home opener yesterday. I would venture to say that the Nats bullpen problems have not yet been solved.
Well, yeah, I guess picking up where they left off, hoping things will get a little bit better down on South Capitol Street later this year, but sure doesn't feel like it.
I'll
tell you what, the Caps are putting a late season surge on.
That's
there
right.
There is a very reasonable chance, I'm about to jinx them for tonight, they squeak into the playoffs. Which would be fantastic. It's fun to have a team to root for. And, you guys are writing off the Nats after one home game. It may be that badly. The other baseball thing I'm super excited about is my old hometown, Baltimore Orioles, just got stole to the great David Rubenstein, who's a D.C. guy, originally a Baltimore guy. His high school history teacher was Harold Greenwald, my grandfather.
I'll be dog. That's
Holy
so cool.
Holy smokes.
That's what we have in common. Then he's a billionaire and I'm not. But, we both knew Harold Greenwald and loved him.
You've interviewed Rubenstein on your series.
He is arguably the greatest of all time interviewer. So it's actually hard to interview the best interviewer of all time because you figure he's going to go judo flip and turn the tables on you. You got to be ready to not let him interview you, which I was successful at.
Well, downtown Washington got some really good news because the Caps and the Wizards are going to stay. They're going to upgrade the Verizon Capital One Center, whatever in the hell we're calling it right now.
After Glenn Youngkin got sucker punched by the Democrats in the legislature in Virginia.
But wasn't that just a play by Leonsis to... And I will say, maybe this played into it, but Mayor Bowser gave the let's play ball yesterday in Nats Park, and she was pretty roundly cheered.
For somebody who works three blocks down the street from that arena, boy, am I glad they're staying.
Yes.
The world's smallest violin is playing for Glenn Youngkin, who I know both of you thought is going to be the next, president of the United States, Reagan-esque. As it turns out, he's just a tall guy in a red vest with not a lot else
Behind
it. He's lost the legislature in Virginia. He had he was going to run for president, then he wasn't, then he was, and he's not. He's like a Mario Cuomo without any of the poetry. good for Glenn Youngkin.
Write him off.
I'm writing him off.
He's tall. He's got lots of money.
Can't run for re-election in Virginia. He's got nowhere to go.
DT's having a good time talking about Virginia politics. Let's talk a little bit about Maryland politics. Obviously, this will be a challenge for Governor Wes Moore, but there's also an open Senate seat in Maryland, and former Governor Larry Hogan has opened up a pretty fresh lead. We don't know who the Democratic nominee is going to be at this point. Obviously, we have a primary for both sides to determine, but Bruce, we're all three Maryland residents. Can the free state of Maryland elect a Republican to the United States Senate?
We're going to find out. You're right. He is the best possible candidate the Republicans could have put forward. He's won not once, but twice for governor. If it's a referendum on Larry Hogan, he's got a really good shot. If it's a referendum on Donald Trump, that's a state that's going to go for Joe Biden by double digits, probably starting with two, maybe three. It's one of the most progressive voting states in the country at the presidential level. So Larry Hogan's going to have to find a way to have massive distance while at the same time not dumping on President Trump, which he's done, but so much that he causes the Republican MAGA base in Maryland, however small that may be, to say we're staying home.
As someone who pays quite generously for the privilege of living in the free state of Maryland, it's nice to have the prospect of my vote actually counting here in a federal election. It seems
it's nice to
me,
have a not batshit crazy Republican to vote for.
Right. But it seems to me Hogan's got a pretty nuanced case to make, and I don't know if it gets him there. But I think Hogan's case is, hey, look, you need a Mitt Romney type in the Senate Republican caucus. Like, you want somebody on the inside that is going to hold the line if Trump gets elected. Can that bring over enough Democrats and independents without pissing off all the Republican votes in Maryland that you'd actually need to win?
Good luck with that message when Donald Trump is at the top of the ticket in Maryland. I think that, you know, Larry Hogan, yes, got elected twice in Maryland, an impressive feat for any Republican. You know, it seems to me to be a tough putt for him to be able to pull off that kind of a message. Appealing to moderates and independents, not betraying. I mean, he's spoken out vociferously against Donald Trump, and in fact, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, was thinking about running on the no labels ticket. So that's a lot of mixed messages to what should be his base. And so we'll see how that goes.
But Democrats have a real primary going on.
Absolutely have a real primary. And I tend to think in a, when you have a tough primary, you hope the best rise to the top here. You've got Angela Alsobrooks, who's the Prince George's County executive, against David Trone, who's a congressman / booze seller.
Total wine. Love it.
Did you get an advertisement for that there?
I think, I mean, you punch it in on the app, you pull up, you open your trunk, you're loaded up with all the wine and beer you need for the month.
I think that's an in-kind contribution right there. But look, that primary is, at the end of next month in May? And I think whoever comes out of that primary is going to be stronger for it. And they're going to need to be, because Larry Hogan is a legitimate recruiting success for Republicans. I will give you that. I still don't think he can win in a presidential election year, but the Democrats are going to need to be at the top of their game.
Well, boys, we do have a day job. We are here in recess. The circus will be back in town before we know it. It seems like we got over the hump of FY24 appropriations. FY25 appropriations is now in process, along with the NDAA. Lots of stuff that our clients care about. But first up, dealer's choice. There's a national security supplemental that's going to have to get some floor time in the House. FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, and FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, both have to be reauthorized. There's a tax bill hanging out there. One of those could be attractive moving vehicles for tax. The Speaker is perhaps facing a motion to vacate. What do Speaker Johnson and Majority Leader Schumer tackle first when they get back?
Well, I think we know the answer to that, because Speaker Johnson has told us that he is going to take up the foreign aid spending bill, or at least he's indicated that that is something the House will deal with during these next 2 weeks. So the House is coming back, have a two-week session here, and it seems like either Ukraine funding or the larger foreign aid supplemental is something that will come to the House floor. Now, what he has said it won't be is a Senate bill, which passed with 70 votes and certainly would have a majority on the House floor and could pass very quickly. That is not something he's going to bring up. Why isn't he going to bring that up? Is because he has a problem on his right flank, not unlike his predecessor Kevin McCarthy had. He's got bills that are popular, could get majority vote in the House, but that Freedom Caucus set has laid a marker. They don't like the Ukraine bill. They also don't like the FISA bill. So I think the Speaker is in a world of hurt coming back here, because in addition to having these two bills that have vocal opposition within his own conference, he's also got a one seat majority going into this next work period here, and a guillotine like sword above his head with a motion to vacate that was offered by Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, Bruce,
I take the under on whether he's going to make it through the month of April.
Yeah, Bruce,
I'll take that bet.
It seems like there's not much chance that the Senate passed foreign aid supplemental is going to come back from the House as passed by the Senate. There's this lend-lease type, sort of idea out there that we turn this into a loan program. And does that satisfy conservatives? Does that solve Johnson's right flank problem?
I think satisfying conservatives and Johnson's right flank problem are actually two very different things. I'm not sure being a MAGA person makes you conservative in the sense from Edmund Burke through Ronald Reagan that we understood conservatism. I think some of the right wing problem is they're against whoever sits in leadership. you know, Speaker Johnson was one of them. He was, you know, he had a sharp pitchfork and a bright torch. And then he was called to leadership, and he got responsible because you've actually got to make the trains run. And all of a sudden, they're saying he's an establishment sellout like 18 seconds later, which is kind of funny. You're right. The House is going to want to do its thing. The Senate's going to want to do their thing. You know, the idea of structuring the money as a loan, not a straight up gift, that ought to be able to get done. Another piece that actually is not a bad innovation, although I don't know the law of it, is why don't we take some of the confiscated billions that belong to Vladimir Putin and his henchmen and give the Ukrainians that money?
That's a great question.
Well, look, I mean, there are a couple problems there. Most of the Russian oligarch money is in European banks. And despite what some of the MAGA people would like, we cannot order foreign countries to freeze assets that aren't in our banks. Number two is this, we're going to lend them the money. It's going to be a loan. Boy, I'm glad these guys weren't in charge when George Marshall was helping
you mean
rebuild.
Lend lease?
No, but I'm saying this is all nonsense to let the Republicans be able to go home and say, we're just lending them the money, which they all know will be forgiven. It is all nonsense here. Like, this is a country that we all believe, or at least many believe in the country, that we should be helping Ukraine. We've helped them for 2 years, and now we're going to turn and run because these Republicans aren't willing to stand up and say we're not going to support them anymore. It's too much. It is beyond awful at this point. Where is Ronald Reagan gone? Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, and I'll give you a loan to help tear it down, and then you can repay it, East Germany. Give me a break.
Well, the isolationist streak in American politics, but in the Republican Party specifically, it has a long and distinguished history.
Charles Lindbergh.
Really bringing up the greatest hits. But Speaker Johnson does have a serious and immediate problem. The MTV, the Marjorie Taylor Greene motion to vacate, was filed right before we left for recess. I understand she has to make it privileged, and then you get 2 days. But, you know, she can pull the trigger on this. But the question is for you, DT, because I think, you know, she would only need one Republican to join her if all the Democrats stick together. And
it's still two.
And
Gallagher
the Speaker
leave for a couple weeks.
But one, two. Okay. So, but Bob Good and Matt Gaetz.
So here's, I think we can look at the recent past, which is instructive here. Because my colleague to my right here said, why won't the Democrats defend Carolyn or Kevin McCarthy? Why won't they defend him?
And I didn't say defend him.
Why won't you protect him? Now, look, you get something worse. Could we roll the videotape here, Dean? Let's get a rewind here.
What the audio said was, I said, if they don't take a walk, he's going to compromise and give away horrible, horrible, horrible procedural gives to the Freedom Caucus. And what happened? A single vote motion to vacate. The Rules Committee with people who don't want anything to pass the House. Had the Democrats let Kevin McCarthy twist in the wind for, I don't know, 1, 2, 5, 10 votes, and then said, not we're going to bail him out, we're just going to, let's go to the Dubliner and have a couple, while then the overwhelming majority of the Republicans, without the Democrats voting against him, would have been able to get the Speaker in place. You know what you wouldn't have? You wouldn't have all this super stupidity that's
making
it even
harder. Democrats save me from myself, is basically the argument there. Good Lord. Here's what I think is instructive. The reason Kevin McCarthy got tossed and the reason Democrats wouldn't save him from himself was because when the deal was cut in October and the government stayed open, Kevin McCarthy went on the Sunday shows and then said the Democrats were trying to shut down the government. There were Democrats in leadership circles who up until that moment were saying we can help him get through this crisis. But you can't. Like, why would he have kicked the Democrats at that point? It shows you how finger in the air that guy stood for nothing.
Well,
here's the good news for Johnson is to this point, he has not tried to spit in the eye of the Dems here. He's obviously a strong conservative here, but I haven't seen that. And so I do think in my conversations with members over the preceding couple of weeks here, if he brings a Ukraine bill to the floor that Democrats can support, and then a motion to vacate gets immediately launched by MTG, I think the Democrats will be there to help him to keep the job. I think I've heard with a number of them that said if he does what he says he does and there's in it something in it for Democrats, then they'll help. Now, that is not a long-term recipe for success here.
It is
because
not.
If the Dems save him one day, guess what's going to happen the next day? Right. They're going to offer it again and again and again.
Because I've heard you say, DT, that unlike Kevin McCarthy and Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Johnson and Leader Jeffries actually talk to one another.
That's my understanding, is that they are having a dialogue, which you need to have when you're trying to run the House of Representatives and particularly when you've got a one vote margin.
Well, we will a lot to sort through here when the circus gets back into town. 2024 has just from day one, we have really been off to the races. Speaking of races, you like that segue, boys?
So good.
We are in a presidential election year. We've kind of hemmed and hawed back and forth. I've even predicted that neither the president nor the former president would end up on the ballot, but that was a lot of hopefulness speaking because this is Trump v. Biden. This race to me just seems incredibly tight, incredibly close. I mean, we hear from a lot of clients and others. There's an enormous amount of anxiety, I think, out there about this race. Who wins, who loses, who accepts defeat and who does not. You know, these are very fraught times in which we live. But, you know, I don't see how this doesn't come down to that handful of states, Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, the big swings. I think we're down, you know, between that handful of states, you're like 15,000 votes, right? So where are we?
Well, so to me, the interesting question is whose hand would you rather play if you had to play a hand? As a rule, almost every presidential election is a referendum on the sitting president, though many sitting presidents try to make it a referendum on the challengers. So that's what the Bush folks in 2004 in part did against John Kerry. That was why the Obama folks decided that Mitt Romney was a bad, bad man because he had a war on women. Make it about him, not about, you know, a record that people may or may not have loved. If it's a referendum on Biden, Biden loses. If a referendum on Trump, Trump loses. On the one hand, I think Trump has an easier hand to play. If you think about Trump, all he's got to do is act normal. Now, I'm not saying he can, and DT's going to explain why he can't. But if you think about Trump, if you get more Trumpy, you lose swing votes. If you get more normal, you gain swing and you can unite the right and make it a referendum on the sitting president. All you've got to do is not say stuff that makes people think, wow, this guy's unstable. Biden's hand, by contrast, if he goes left, he loses swing voters. If he goes right, he loses the base. If he holds in place, he is losing, according to the current polls. So his only play is attack Trump and make it about Trump and see if you can't bait Trump into also making it about Trump, which is the possible ace in the hole.
So your case for Trump is he just needs to be normal. This is a guy who...
It's like I need to be tall. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard for some people.
This is a guy who 3 days ago started selling his own version of the Bible. There is zero chance Donald Trump is going to act normal. Boy, it's going to be a long election season here. I agree with what you said, Dean. We've got a handful of states and a handful of votes. In 2016, it was close. Bruce would point out 79,000 votes in four states would have made Hillary Clinton president. 4 years later, in 2020, you change, 40,000 votes in three states,
yeah,
and Donald Trump would have been reelected. So it will absolutely be a close election here. And I think the most instructive thing that Donald Trump has done here, and we're going to hear a ton about this, was he tweeted out on his hot shots. Did you get any Truth Social stock, by the way, Bruce? Did you invest in any?
I did not.
That's too bad. On Truth Social, he just tweeted out the other day, or whatever you do on Truth Social, it is, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Which gave Donald Trump the ability to remind people where we were 4 years ago, which 4 years ago, we were all locked up at home. We're rationing toilet paper. End up a million Americans dying during a pandemic here. That doesn't even get to some of the other stuff that went on with him, whether it's injecting bleach or circling hurricanes or saying he's going to nuclear bomb. I mean, there's such a long list of nonsense here to go through that we're numb to it. But I think the more the Biden campaign can both remind people where we were 4 years ago and how far we have come. And that is where I think things are starting to crystallize for them, because the economic indicators are things are getting better with each passing month here. Inflation gets better. The economy is churning. The stock market is as high as it has ever been. Things are looking up, and that's what Joe Biden has to convince enough Americans that actually things are doing better.
He does, but he's got a tough hand. This is, I sort of set the economic thing to the side. I think people are really focused on other things, and at least in a lot of these special elections we've seen, it's been immigration is the Republican case against Democrats writ large, and the abortion issue and abortion access is the Democratic case.
Immigration
and inflation. But I will say nothing gets the vitriol going against this president than those scenes down at the border. That is his biggest Achilles heel. I'm with you, Bruce. I would love to see former President Trump, hey, Nikki Haley voters, Ron DeSantis voters, let's put the band back together. But there's no
of course, way. What he said, though, when Nikki Haley evidence. Drops out was, I don't need him.
I don't need him.
Well,
right. I don't need
come
him.
On over. We'll take him.
Well, Bruce, as we close out here, shameless plug, you have switched over to Substack. You've discarded your long used email distribution list and switched over to a different form to get out your charts and slides.
So yes, the platform for getting out charts, which was known by most people as spam, by my sending thousands and thousands of emails BCC, ran into a problem of all of a sudden they were calling me the system was calling me a spammer, but also to let new people sign up was high friction. You know, to have people drop out who felt like dropping out was high friction. It's much easier. What I didn't expect though was once I switched to Substack, which by the way, go find it. It's free. Love to have people join. Is you can't do a Substack four times a year. So I decided, well, I should probably start doing something with a little more cadence. So I started 6 a.m. Sunday morning, 6 Chart Sunday, where we put out some just interesting charts we saw across things we read for the week, sometimes original work, which has seemingly caught on. It's about 1,500 people have added their names net to receive it. It's fun. It's interesting. It kind of, the one thing it makes you do though, is as I read information during the week, I now have in mind, would this be a good chart? Would this be a good chart? Which probably warps how I absorb information.
Let's be honest. You're always thinking, will this be a good chart?
I probably am.
Well, give Bruce Melman a subscribe on Substack for the 6 Chart Sunday and the quarterly slide deck. And give 14th and G a subscribe on iHeartMedia, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast. Because we will be back again here on 14th and G to cover all of 2024 in 24 minutes. Bruce Melman, David Thomas, thank you for joining me on 14th and G.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast, brought to you by the lobbying firm of Melman Consulting. For more, just type 14th and G podcast into your favorite search engine, or look for 14th and G wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe.
Beam me up, Mr. Speaker.